When I was looking for a sponsor for this show, I was so excited to find out that my favorite offering maybe ever was available, and that's Audible. I have been using Audible for over 15 years, if not more. I have hundreds of books on there. I listen to audiobooks just as much as I listen to podcasts, probably, which is a lot. And I love, of course, reading physical books. I just don't make enough time for it right now. And I know that if I wait to make the time, then I won't be able to get to the book for a long time. So sometimes having the audio version available is really, really helpful. And then this is, I think, more relevant for the kinds of books that I would listen to, which are like a lot of spiritual teachings and maybe like business books and things that are not the nonfiction type. I do listen to nonfiction as well, but I definitely listen to the other books a lot more, at least historically speaking. So it was nice because a lot of times I could listen to the book. And then if I wanted to get the book later, the actual physical book, I could go through it as well. And I'd have a deeper understanding, especially when it was like a esoteric concept. I really loved that so much. I think that having the audio version of a book is so, it's such a wonderful offering because our culture moves really quickly. And it is really important that we sit and read physical books. However, it's also really good that we can listen to things and get that information still. And it's totally mind expanding when you have that availability, which is one of the reasons I love podcasts and that, of course, I'm sitting here doing it. So that's one reason I love Audible. I also really love it because I really feel like we have so many, again, messages that come at us all the time in culture. You know, our phones, our social media, the television, the radio, everywhere we go, there's somebody saying something. And I really believe it's important to curate what you put in your ears, and you actually have control over that. With something like Audible, you can really be specific, and it's very individual to you what you want to listen to and how you want to shape your mind and how you want to shape your point of view and what kind of other perspectives do you want to try on and see through somebody else's eyes. I think that that is an incredible practice to really expand your life in so many ways. And so I'm really excited that they are a sponsor of the show, and there's a link in the bio. They do a 30-day free trial, and then I think it's like $15 after that a month. And I'm telling you, it is one of my treasured collections that I have. It's been just incredibly impactful in my life in so many ways. I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't have it. So I'm really excited about it, if you can't tell. And I hope you go ahead and use that link. And thank you for being here. And we'll see who the next sponsor is too. I'm only going to try to pick things that I really get excited about myself personally. And Audible 100% is one of them. All right, back to the episode. Hi, my name is Greta Hotmer, and this is a thought experiment called Life, a podcast for multi-passionate, creative individuals living unconventional lives. If you're interested in everything and you don't feel like you fit into a niche, this is probably a good place to be. If you like to hear stories from other people who also don't live conventional lives but are living beautiful lives, I wanted to create a space where we could share those stories more. I'll share my stories and I'll share other people's stories. I am in love with hearing people's stories. I find the human experience, incredibly magical, and that's how I see it really when I talk to people and our experiences. I'm definitely existential, you know, I just came out that way. And it's something that I feel could use a little bit more love in our culture, just the beauty of our stories. You know, I really struggled with putting this podcast out years ago because I didn't fit into a niche, and, you know, everything's like fit into a niche or else. So I'm walking my talk here by just letting this be what it is. We'll see where it goes. I hope that you find something useful out of it. I'm very much a believer of we find the messages that we need when we need them, and they could be something as simple as a billboard you drive by, or it could be some random chick you're listening to on Spotify, whatever, you know, on the internet, and you catch something, right? You could learn it from a toddler who says something one day, and you're just like, wow, that really landed for me. So I hope that something lands for you. For me, for today, you know, I've done a few podcasts already, and the topics are varied, as promised. And I'm going to share my story about Lyme disease, my experience with Lyme disease today. I will be talking about, so I have my master's in herbalism and nutrition, functional, like integrative nutrition, and therapeutic herbalism through Maryland University of Integrative Health. And I don't practice, but I basically got my master's to take better care of myself. It was kind of how it feels. And I love to teach. I really love to teach and pass along the plant medicines and nutritional medicines and lifestyle medicine in that sense. So I will be talking more about those things in depth, in that sense. I'm going to mention some things that helped me with Lyme disease, but Lyme disease is very individual. And although you can find, you know, herbal therapeutic practices and stuff like that that are helpful across the board, right? Like I may say something that you're like, oh, I haven't tried that before. If you have Lyme disease or have an autoimmune condition similar, there might be some very helpful things as well. So I'm gonna mention those things. None of this is medical advice. This is just my story, and it's kind of a long one. So I will try to be concise about it. But I want to share. I had the experience of interviewing some people recently who have Lyme disease, like I have Lyme disease, and I hadn't really met anybody like that. So most of the people I met who had Lyme disease didn't really have it quite as severe as I had it. And thankfully, and on my end, it felt kind of like, you know, I was told a lot during this experience that it was in my head and that it wasn't real. And then I should like get over it and all those things, think positive, and I'll talk about all that. So I was told a lot of those things, and hearing these people's stories really validated my experience in a way that I didn't know that I needed. I knew other people had it like how I had it, but I hadn't talked to them personally and also just heard so many parallels in their stories. So it's one of the reasons I want to share it. I'm not sharing it to be like, woe is me and here's this sob story kind of thing. I'm very grateful for the experiences and everything, all the skills that I've learned and all of the, you know, tools and resources and perspectives that I've gained from having a chronic disease for, you know, my whole adult life. But, you know, yeah, it sucked. It does suck. It sucks sometimes. But also life is a full contact sport is how I feel about it now, you know, a lot longer. So it's not a attitude that I had when this started. Let's say that. So I'm going to share my story. Please, again, take from it what you will. I hope if you have Lyme disease, I'm just going to off the bat, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. There is a doctor, Marty Ross, and he has a phenomenal website that has a lot of protocols on it. The blogs are great. The supplements are great. If you are looking for some resources in how to handle this, I think he does a pretty good job from what I've seen addressing both the non-pharmaceutical and pharmaceutical approaches that you can take. So that's somebody that I would definitely recommend. And then Dr. Stephen Booner, who's no longer with us, his book, Healing Lyme, was absolutely instrumental for me. So, and Marty Ross, Dr. Marty Ross also references Dr. Booner a lot. So those are the ones that I'm most familiar with in terms of the doctors out there right now. But I'm also compiling, you know, more information because I want to keep passing it along. And it's been a bit since I've really done my like deep dive study in terms of treating some of these things, because I kind of have the protocols that I know work for me so far. And then I like dial in a little bit here and there as I go. So as I go, I will pass those things along. Again, Lyme disease is very individual. It really kind of matters, you know, what state you were in when you got Lyme, when you were bit or transmitted, however you got it, and which is under debate of how that happens. So it kind of depends on that. It depends on, you know, how long did you have it? Did you have other interventions before? Like sometimes doctors will prescribe antibiotics, not for a long enough period of time. I'll talk about that. And it kind of messes up your opportunity to heal things. So there's, and then there's co-infections. That's like the biggest thing. There's co-infections that usually come with Lyme disease. So it complicates things. They require different treatment usually and different approaches. And from my understanding, I think that there's a little bit more leeway with this now from the research, but the way that I understood it for a long time is that you sort of, it's a good, let's just say best practices to focus on treating your co-infections maybe before trying to get to the spirochete, the third Lyme. So, all right, here we go. Let me get some coffee because I'd be talking. I live in Colorado now, but I grew up in Pennsylvania and in a suburb outside of Philadelphia where Lyme disease is very prevalent on the East Coast in general. So, you know, I remember sort of hearing about it growing up, but it was pretty, it wasn't talked about a whole lot at that point. So when I was 20, I believe is when I got bit. So, and this is, I'm 42 now, so that's 22 years ago. So I believe that is when I got bit. And, but I didn't have any of the classic symptoms. So if you have any familiarity with Lyme disease, and especially most practitioners, your like traditional Western medicine will ask if you have a bullseye rash, a and kind of your standard, you know, bullseye rash is usually what they look for. But a lot of people don't get it. I did not get it. I don't know when I got bit. I have a guess of when I got bit, but I'm not really sure. So I was in college at Temple University, and I was teaching Krav Maga full time in South Philly. And so I was very, very active. I'm 5 feet tall, and everybody else I trained with was a big man, basically. So I was like just pushing the limits of things. And I definitely took a lot of head trauma as well. I definitely had a bunch of concussions around this time. You know, all of that kind of leading up to it, I was training very, very hard during that time. And I got bit, I believe, like I said, somewhere around there. And when I was 21, so like I think maybe like end of my 20s into right around almost 21. So when I was 21, I took a 2.5 month trip to Europe through Outward Bound. And I did it for a college credit for a photography class, and hiked from literally Austria to Italy through the Dolomites, and then sailed on like a big tall ship, like a Christopher Columbus style tall ship, through the Mediterranean for 2.5 weeks. And it was absolutely incredible. However, that's when I got really sick. So even though it was, you know, I mean, I think about that experience still all the time. It's part of the reason I moved to Colorado, because those mountains made such an impression on me. But it was hard to even be present during that time, because I don't know this for sure. I have not seen any studies that show this. I wasn't feeling super great before the trip. Like, I think I got bit like a few months before. But again, I trained really hard, so I didn't really notice as much. I just started to feel a little bit not as energetic, I guess. And then when I went to Europe for those 2.5 months, I believe that the altitude agitated the spirochetes, essentially. Again, I don't have any study to show that this is true. I haven't really looked recently, but I've noticed since then, the reason I have this belief is since then, anytime I went to altitude, if I was visiting any kind of like mountains or anything, I would notice that my symptoms would flare. So it was like everything was getting agitated. The spirochetes, the bacteria for Lyme disease are like little corkscrew, little motherfuckers. And I think that they would get angry about or whatever. They would get activated. So, and a lot of times that's the thing, you know, well, that is the thing with Lyme disease, is them, their activity and being activated. So cut to, I go to Europe. I do this trip. I basically couldn't finish the trip. Like the last week of hiking on the boat, we could just be on the boat. But the last week of hiking, there was 5 weeks of hiking. So the fifth week of hiking, I had to stay with another friend who also was having some health things. And we both stayed that last week because we were a mess. So she had, I think, a knee injury. And I just, essentially what happened was, you know, I couldn't get dressed. Like I was that tired. So obviously we were hiking a ton, you know, covering a lot of distance and just hiking all out. But I was 21. I had been an athlete all my life. I had been very, you know, everything was in my favor in the sense of being able to like keep up and do it. And I found myself just being in so much pain. And then literally, I remember a couple mornings I went to get dressed and I dropped my shirt and I could not pick it up. And it was a really scary feeling at that time because, you know, I was super young and I'm in the middle of the mountains and I don't know how to like literally get to the next place. Like we were sometimes near towns and stuff, but it was also it was right when everything was really starting. Like I kind of assumed that it would pass. So I come back home and I go back to teaching Krav and I start having so much pain in my left leg that it becomes difficult for me to walk on my left side. So it was like sciatic pain, but like around my entire leg. So I would be teaching class and then I couldn't, like I would go to take a step and I wouldn't be able to put weight on my leg because the pain would just be like, you know, mind melting. And so I would just have to, you know, do my best from there and continue to teach class until it moved on. So, and then I got, you know, and that obviously was very concerning. And it wasn't really until, like, I didn't really know what was going on at that point, but I had been already so tired from the trip and I really never recovered, maybe ever after that trip. I didn't really recover. And I, one morning, woke up and my knees and my hands and my face were all poofy. Like they were all just like having some kind of allergic reaction. And I called the doctor and they were like, you know, have you used anything differently? And I, because I like to be as, you know, transparent as possible, I was like, I did use like this one lotion, but I've used it, I guess, maybe one or two times before, but I don't think that's it. And they're like, no, it probably is. It probably is. And that was kind of the response that I got a lot from doctors was like, oh, it's probably not this thing. It's probably that thing. So the morning that I got that, I actually was already in physical therapy for my leg because I was having trouble walking. And so I remember I called the doctor, they blew me off, and then I went to my physical therapist and they saw me and they were like, this is not normal. You need to go get tested. So I got tested and it came back positive for Lyme, but not like super duper strong, but positive for Lyme. So that was like the first moment that I was like, okay, I have this thing. And all I knew of Lyme is that you never get rid of it. And it like die and it ruins your life. And I'm 21. So I'm like, oh my God. And then I also found out that I had mono at the same time. So I had Lyme and I had mono. And I can't remember if there was something else, but there was just it was a lot. So I pulled back on teaching more and got into yoga more. And this is really where my life started taking a turn towards, you know, understanding like energy and meditation and Reiki. And I definitely got into crystals at this time. Like I was looking for some way to find some peace. So I got Lyme diagnosed. I got a round of antibiotics, doxycycline, and things cleared up a little bit. But unfortunately, what happens when you have Lyme disease for as long as I had it and then give the person antibiotics for like 6 weeks or so, it just chases the spirochetes deeper into your tissues. So you may resolve your symptoms temporarily, but then they come back and they're also like more dug into your body. So I got a little bit better and then I would get a lot worse. And then I got a little bit better and got a lot worse. And I was still teaching Krav and it was just very like, everything was just too much at that time. So I also didn't have, you know, I didn't have good personal boundaries. I didn't have good, like my no muscle was not good. I was very young. I definitely, looking back now, can see how all of that, like it just, I did not have enough armor internally, externally to be able to handle the situation. And when you have Lyme disease, it's like, you know, it varies, but at this point it's like, if you've been up for 2 days with, you know, barely any sleep, somebody's asking you to do math problems. And also you did like the hardest workout where like maybe you pulled a bunch of muscles and standing and thinking and just being awake is like, it's very, it's a lot. So and from what I've heard from long COVID people, it is similar in that sense too, unfortunately. So I eventually left teaching Krav because I knew I just couldn't do it. I ended up taking 10 years off of martial arts at that point, and I think I was 24 at that, or 23, 24. And made a bunch of changes in my life. I did acupuncture. I used like the little bit of savings I had and did acupuncture at that time, and it did really help me a lot. I would have kept going had I been able to afford it at the time. And the acupuncturist, he really changed my life in so many ways. He, this is Dr. Burgoon in Westchester. He, I like wanted to become an acupuncturist after working with him. His kindness and understanding of like what I was going through was tremendously helpful. He had been an internal medicine doctor and then studied acupuncture in China and then came back to the States and practiced. And he told me basically, you know, your body is like, because I asked him, how soon can I get better? I was like, this is great. How soon can I get better, please? I got things to do. And he very kindly said, you know, if there's been a, I think he said a bush that had been like burned, right? And not killed, but just burned. How long would it take for it to come back to life? And how do you track that progress? Like, how do you chart it, I should say, and get excited about like what's happening? So he was like, you would look for leaves, you know, and you would look for berries and you would look for signs of life, basically. And he's like, and you should think of yourself in that way where you're going to look for those leaves and you're going to look for the growth and the healing area, even if the whole thing hasn't been healed immediately, like how I wanted it to be, you know, you look for those things. And that really stuck with me both when I was practicing with herbalism and nutrition, and just in my life as a whole, it's very much helped to think about things like that. It's helped me to embrace a bit of a gentler path. And again, our culture is very much just go, and we're getting better at it. I talked in one episode how moss girl life is becoming a thing instead of boss girl life. And I think it's because everybody is just fried after this bunch of years. But our culture too is like we're looking for little leaves and signs of growth and signs of healing in that sense. So Dr. Burgoon really, really helped me. I was able to, after that experience, I was able to get back to like some things that I loved. And like I said, I had made a bunch of decisions in that time period where I had, shifted away from some relationships and stopped teaching Krav and just changed my life in a lot of ways too, which really helped with my healing in the sense that I was going in a better direction. And I will say during that time as well, I think, I don't know if it was before I saw Dr. Burgoon, but this is something that feel most of us with Lyme have had this experience. And unfortunately, a lot of women have had this experience with male doctors where, you know, and I know that I'm not speaking the highest of some of these, the Western medicine and some of this, but I also have had a lot of really wonderful Western medicine doctors as well. I think there's a time and a place for everything. But this one in particular, you know, I had a positive Lyme test and it wasn't like off the charts, but Lyme tests are not reliable. So like if you detect it, you don't really know. There's not like a way to measure how much you have because it's just taking a screenshot, if you will, of your body at one time, one place. And I mean, most blood tests are, but specifically in this case with Lyme, it's hard to measure what exactly is happening. Not to mention when you have Lyme for a long time, it's hard to like, they don't really understand like how it's working. It seems like it can work in so many different ways in terms of how it's creating symptoms. Is it something that it's actively doing to your joints or to your brain? It is a neurological disease ultimately. So is it something that's active happening or is it something that like, is it residual trauma? Like did the spirochetes affect that area and now that area is just like ravaged from it, or are the spirochetes in that area ravaging it currently, if that makes sense? So I had gone to another doctor, I think, before this and was asking for help. Just, you know, more understanding, resources, recommendations, help me, please. And I told him I'd been reading up on Lyme so I could understand it more. And he goes, yeah, well, if you read a book on depression, you would just think you have depression. And that really, I'm telling you that because like, honestly, that is fair, maybe true, right? But maybe true in the sense that it could be true for somebody. But I'm saying this because I know a lot of us who've had these experiences have gone through something like that. And thankfully, the female nurse practitioner, when she saw me and I was maybe 22 at this point, and I could barely ride in a car seat, like in a car seat, something like in a baby's car seat. I could barely ride in the passenger seat without tremendous pain. Just the vibration of the car and like turning and going over bumps, I could just feel it up my spine, down my joints, like I could feel everything. And it was really, really hard to just be in the car and go anywhere. And she was like, yeah, that's not normal. You definitely have something going on. Like, and that's just the difference, you know, in approaches of looking at that. Thank God she did that. But it taught me a lot in the sense that it was very validating. I for sure have struggled with that in my life of just being able to validate my own experience. I've struggled with anxiety forever, but I didn't know it. I just didn't feel good. I didn't know what it was though. I was just like, I feel fucking weird. Before Lyme and then Lyme came in. So I didn't know how to articulate that. So it was very validating in the sense that like you have these feelings and this is probably what's happening, but let's take it seriously. Let's figure out if we can help you. So I want to say that to you in case you have been in a situation where you know in your body that something's going on and maybe whoever the practitioner you're working with is not seeing that for you. They're projecting their own beliefs onto your situation. So always find somebody, like, always know that you can find other opinions. There are so many practitioners out there. Some are wonderful, some are not. But it's, you have many to try to, like, go through and find other opinions if you can. So I wanted just to mention that. So by 25, I was, like, doing pretty okay. And my life was, like, starting to get back to somewhat normal-ish. And I think that I got bit again. So I don't really know. Again, I've had one rash before, and it was years after that. Granted, do I love being in the woods? I do. But also, I know there was one lady who was like, stop going in the woods. I'm like, you can get, especially, you know, not to be terrifying about it, but on the East Coast in particular, like if you see deer in your yard, then there are deer ticks there. And also birds carry ticks and mice carry that. Like, unfortunately, it is something that we have to keep an eye out for. It's everywhere. So I did definitely get, I mean, I got bit even right before I moved here a couple years ago. That being said, I'm a little bit all over the place with this. Welcome to my Lyme brain. Just as a beacon of hope in terms of the terrible thing that I just said, that Lyme disease is potentially everywhere. You know, if you keep your, this is one of the biggest reasons that I'm so into like adaptogenic herbs like ashwagandha, astragalus, which is like a Chinese herb that actually has been shown if you take it often, it can help you not get Lyme. Like if you get bit, you have a better chance of not actually getting Lyme and like not holding onto it or having bad effects from it. With the whole Lyme thing, it is unfortunate and scary that it is everywhere on the East Coast, but it's also something that doesn't have to turn into a situation like mine, right? If you are like, just like with COVID and having the comorbidities made it, you know, a lot worse case scenario, same thing with Lyme. If you are, you know, redlining yourself constantly, which I was, that's going to be a major factor in that. You may end up feeling the effects more, becoming more symptomatic because your body is so low on resources and energy. And the other thing is understanding, like, if you're concerned about Lyme for yourself, for your children, whoever, I would find Lyme literate doctors in your area who know how to handle it. So if you do get bit, if you do get a rash, if you do notice something going on and you start taking doxycycline pretty close into that, so, you know, if you do those things right away, like within the first 6 weeks or so, most people, and this is why, like, this is wonderful. Most people that I knew who got bit, they definitely didn't have a good time of it, but they weren't, you know, they weren't destroyed by it, right? It didn't linger and keep going on for years and years and years. And then, you know, if it's ignored, if there are doctors who are just being like, no, you're depressed, you're fine. And then a year and a half later, then you get treated. You need a real serious comprehensive treatment about it. So if it's early and they do a 6 week course of doxycycline or something like that, or amoxicillin, a lot of times symptoms are pretty much resolved there and they can kill it and be done and the story's done. I've seen a lot of people like that. Again, this is not medical advice. This is just what, you know, I've learned along the way and I've also seen in person. So just to have that as an aside, there is hope for sure if you're especially like on the East Coast. Although, you know, I've taught, it's nationwide at this point. So one of the reasons that my like philosophy is to keep the body strong and robust and fortified in general, right? So we don't have to live in a bubble is because, you know, we have tons of things that we come up against. So the more that we can strengthen our bodies and our immune system and our nervous system and all our systems, the more that we can strengthen those things, they'll be able to just handle, you know, whatever's coming at them. It's just like a good general self-care philosophy, I think. So, all right. So at 25, things were going like better. I was in a band called The Moxie. We were like doing well. We were being shopped to labels and we had some like promising future things coming up. And I started getting sick again. I remember, I'm pretty sure. So sometimes when you get bit, you may just get like the flu-like symptoms. And that's, I'm pretty sure what happened with me there. Because I woke up one morning and just vomiting everywhere. And I was like very, very, very sick, like flu-like symptoms for about a day and a half or so. And after that, I never recovered again. I just like really was, all of the symptoms that I had before started coming back. Everything was getting really intense. And the pain that I had in my back had moved to my head. So for me, I had tremendous joint pain in general, just tremendous pain overall, nervous system. I could like feel it all, very foggy thinking. I could sleep anywhere, especially back when I was teaching, like in the first part of my Lyme disease journey, I was sleeping like I could sleep anywhere. I could sleep for a full day. I remember being at a martial arts expo thing and there were like pads that were on the side and there were probably 200 people screaming and kicking things in the room. And I was so exhausted. I just slept for a while until we had to do something else. And then I think I got up and like demoed or something. And then I went back to bed.
on the pads, but that kind of fatigue, like crazy fatigue, you know. And I had had a lot of pain in my low back. So that's pain will migrate with Lyme as well. It'll kind of like stay in one area and then it'll like move to the next area. And yeah, so when I was 25, it moved to my head. I started having the brain fog again. I started having a lot of pain in general. The headaches were really, really bad. I basically from that point had migraines and bad headaches daily for about 5 years. And that summer, we performed for, we like won a MTV2 competition and performed at, you know, like one of the side stages at Susquehanna Center. I don't know what it's called now. Some other center in Camden. And also a couple days before that, I had gotten a PICC line put in. So it was like really, it was a lot. Like it felt very much like my future was, very promising, and yet I couldn't participate in it, if that makes sense. So the PICC line is a port that they put in your heart. So it went in my arm here and then into my heart, and then I would do an IV treatment once a day. So, and that was one of the worst experiences I've ever had. The Rocephin was what I was put on, and it did help, but it was for ladies who've got really bad PMS. You've ever had like the worst PMS, like everything just like was too, I felt so raw and I felt very tired and everything was very like confusing. And also, like I said, there was a lot of good things happening that I couldn't even enjoy because there was this going on. So that was really hard, you know, and that really shaped, I think, a lot of my path for the future of how I wanted to move forward from there. I had that for 2.5 months throughout the summer. I was very happy to be done. I kind of wanted to just put it all behind me after that. I tried to, but the headaches were still happening. And I was allergic to all the migraine medication. So I would get like, my throat would get all like crazy with it. So we decided that wasn't a good idea, but I was still having really bad headaches and the fatigue. So like I was in pain and I didn't have a regular job. I think I was dog walking at that time. And, you know, I was just trying to, and then we had the band, but like that wasn't a full-time thing either yet. So it was very much like my life definitely shifted in that sense where I wasn't able to like show up in the way that I wanted to. Anyways, so from there, then the next couple years were a bit like I still had symptoms, but I was really trying to just move forward from there. I really wanted to try to be able to have like a job where it was like 25 hours a week and just make sure I did something. I wanted to like be able to see people more because I was either at home like or walking dogs, but I wasn't like with people a lot. And I realized it was like taking a toll on my mental health. I went and worked for MAC Cosmetics for a little while and really enjoyed the creativity of that and everything. But it also hurt a lot to stand on the concrete floors. And so after 2 years, 2.5 years of that, I was in tears at the end of an 8-hour shift. Like you could just touch me like that. And it was excruciating. So I went back to physical therapy at that time. I again was having trouble standing on my left leg again. And the maintenance routine that we had come up with, it was just kind of like the best that all of us could figure out together, was Vicodin and Adderall. So Vicodin to help kill the pain. I wasn't allergic to it. And Adderall to keep me awake, keep me like focused. And it worked enough, but I didn't feel like I was there. You know, I didn't feel like I was like in my body. And, you know, I've always been really moderate about things. And I knew that. And I've been surrounded by a lot of addiction and people abusing things. And at that time, people were abusing those specific two things like crazy all over the place. So I was very conflicted. I was about 28 or so at this time, where I felt like this was the only the answers that we could come up with for me just to like kind of live life a little bit, right? Like I was able to pursue music a little bit. I was able to work a little bit, but nothing was really getting me healed. I wasn't really like getting any better. I was just kind of putting band-aids all over everything. And that's just not my style. And I knew that at some point I would be able to find a different answer, but it also was very hard to feel brave enough to do it because it did work in the sense that I wasn't in bed. You know, I wasn't just like asleep in bed all the time. I was doing things and it was scary to let go of that, right? And I knew that I would be able to let go of it when it was the right time. Let's put it that way. And that honestly only really happened. During all of this time, I got deeper and deeper into spiritual practice. When I felt like I had no options and no path and no point and no purpose and no energy and blah, 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 you know, it's either leave Earth, and that certainly crossed my mind, and I'm not saying that lightly by any means, but I think it's important that I'm honest about that, because I know that I feel that it was important other people were honest about it to let me know that I wasn't absolutely losing my, like, crazy. But, you know, I get it. So that was obviously something that was there. Life did not feel like it had any meaning, nor did I feel like I had any meaning. And I chose not to go that path. I chose to delve deeper into life in whatever little small way that I could. And this is really, again, where I've always been. My aunt and uncle in particular, who are like my second parents, they really instilled in me a love for nature that is so deep and profound. You know, they really taught me about nature in the most incredible ways. And I really came back to it during this time. I really came back to those practices, like just being, and again, of course, Lyme disease is in nature, whatever. But again, if you see a deer in your yard, then Lyme disease is there too. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to the woods and gonna talk to the trees. And then I just, you know, I would read, I would listen to podcasts, I would listen to audiobooks, I would absorb everything I could that gave me some more context into the mysticism of life, because it was the only thing giving me hope. It was the only thing that helped me feel like there was more to this experience. It can't just be this. This has got to be, there's a bigger story arc here. And I have to believe in that, you know. There's a quote, something about like hope isn't like this, like, you know, flighty thing. It's like on its knees. It's like on its knees, like crawling, like this is my last hope kind of thing. So that's very much where I was at that time. And so I knew I wanted to let go of the maintenance protocol that we had. I didn't feel good about it. I just like didn't feel good. And I knew on a whatever level that it was not sustainable either. Like, I'm like, I can't see myself at 42 in this. Like, that doesn't seem like I'm going to be in good shape. Like, my organs probably are not going to like that. So I ended up finding this doctor. I can't find his name, unfortunately. I don't remember it at the moment. But he was in Reading, Pennsylvania. And I just looked up, and it looks like there's a bunch of Lyme literate doctors in Reading, Pennsylvania now. So yay. So again, this is the beauty that this is an old story right now. Like, there's so many more options if you have Lyme disease, any like chronic disease like that. So there's so many more options. So my wonderful friend Sam came with me to drive to Reading to go see this doctor. He was booked out for months. He didn't take insurance, but he was having success with treating people with Lyme. And I was like, I need to meet this guy. I want to see what he has to say and like what other perspectives he could offer. I went and I met him, and it was the best. I only saw him one time. It was the best doctor visit I have ever had. He kind of looked like Dustin Hoffman, and he came in the room singing. And I don't know about you, but I've not gone to many doctors who are like singing jolly, just super jolly, coming in with like the best energy. The whole place was filled with people with Lyme disease. They had the PICC line. So when you first get your PICC line, you like sit, kind of like chemotherapy, you get like the IV drip and you sit in the chair. There was like rows of people with that. Just people, just sick people everywhere. And he was like, he was that beacon of hope. He was like, I got you, you know, don't worry. On the wall, they had posters. There were some posters of, you know, like, I remember some kind of like Western medicine, like this pill will help you, whatever. But primarily it was like fruits and vegetables on the wall and like talking about plants and, you know, just a truly integrative approach. It was the first time I ever saw it in person, and it was life changing. So I talked to him. He's like, listen, we could do, again, the testing for things, whether it's the co-infections or Lyme disease in general, they're so unreliable. They're very expensive. And for testing for things like the co-infection specifically, a lot of times they'll just do a clinical diagnosis. So they will just assess your symptoms and be able to diagnose you from there. And that's pretty standard practice from what I understand in terms of that. And babesia is the co-infection that I know that I have. And he was like, yeah, you have babesia and you need to take X, Y, and Z. And he did recommend, he was, I think it was Malarone. So babesia is a malaria-like parasite that, you know, you can use Malarone to treat it. So Malarone is what they would use for malaria. And he's like, we'll take a look at like antibiotics after that and see what happens there. So I was like, all right, cool. I took Malarone and I, again, had like not a good reaction. I lost my mind in a different way. Like, not really lost my mind, but I definitely feel like I lost something. Like, my memory, I would like leave drawers open. I was very disoriented, beyond Lyme disease disoriented. And I only took it for a couple days. It was like blowing my mind. I was like, I don't think I can do this. So this is, for me, what was so special is that this is really where my journey into herbalism began, because I was like, because he had mentioned that there are herbal alternatives, like that was a possibility. And I was so wanting to just move away from the pharmaceutical system because I felt unsupported by it. I didn't really feel that I was finding things that actually, it felt good in my body, made sense, you know? And I think that a lot of people understand that, especially if you're opening up to your senses, right? If you're already sensitive than you, and by sensitive, I mean literally sensing more. So if you sense those things, like I can tell when something shifts in my body, like immediately, and I've been called sensitive for it all my life, but you know what though, it's helped me stay healthy-ish, healthy among having a lot of challenges, right? I am generally very healthy despite all of those challenges because I pay attention to the things that change. So I just didn't feel good about the pharmaceuticals. And, you know, I asked him about it and he said, well, you could look into wormwood. And he's like, also known as artemisinin or artemisia, mesia, however, but artemisinin. So I was like, interesting, interesting. So I started looking into that. I didn't get it yet. And then I ended up going to the Renaissance Festival, the only one time I've ever been to it. And we walked into this little apothecary, and which was so magical. I was like, oh, I said, do you have wormwood? And the guy was like, yeah. I was like, can I get some? I'm going to make some tea. And he was like, good luck with that. And I was like, no, I want to do it. I'm on my path. Let me do this thing. So I get the wormwood and I try to make tea. And let me tell you, it is almost impossible to even drink it. It is so bitter, like tannin, like just, you can't get that medicine down if you're going to try and do it like that. So capsules for sure. I guess you could do, I haven't really played with tinctures because that tea experience, I was like, God damn, like I'm not doing that again. I will take the capsules. There's really good, capsules from Allergy Research Group that I use. And they're a bit pricey, but they last for a very long time. And when you take, wormwood or artemisinin, when you take it, basically like for Lyme disease, you kind of pulse it. So, and again, not medical advice. I'm just making these disclaimers because you should definitely talk to your practitioner about these things for yourself. But Babesia has things like night sweats, like you sweat a lot at night, your bottom of your feet hurt, you're very, very foggy, and a bunch of like overlap with some Lyme things. I mean, Lyme disease already will give you like joint pain and stuff, but there's like, it like doubles down with Babesia, but the night sweat thing was really indicative, especially when I said that to the one doctor. He was like, I think I know, he's like, the bottom of your feet hurt as well? Yes. So there's like some that are a little bit louder symptoms that you can kind of differentiate from there. So, when you take artemisinin, usually you do like 2 to 3 days, about 800 milligrams, and then you pause for 2 weeks, then you do it again because your body will build up like a resistance to it essentially for, you know, after 3 days. So you pulse it like that every 2 weeks, and that still works for me wonderfully. That's like one of my lifesavers. So I started using artemisinin. I started feeling a little bit better. And again, I would like get a little better and then get a little worse. And stress was very high in my life at that time. Most of these things, I unfortunately, my, you know, community, let's just say, was very stressful. And I did not, again, I just didn't have, like, both of these things go together. And a lot of times when somebody has an autoimmune issue, autoimmune disease, at least what I've observed, is that there tend to be a lot of boundaries that are being crossed as well in their lives. So whether they just didn't learn how to set boundaries growing up and it's just like carrying on into their lives, that could be going on, or you're just so fucking tired and don't feel well that it's hard to advocate for yourself at all. So that also happens. So if you have anything autoimmune going on and you're listening to this, it's definitely my invitation to you to delve into that work, and I'll include, you know, some books and authors and teachers that I love. Like, this is why I do this now, is because of that, right? Like, I did not have those tools to create a safe space for myself. But about at this time, right, so like things were really like building, I essentially, you know, from other personal things that were going on, created like cut off so many people, cut off so many so many, I kind of feel like it's like an end of your 20s kind of thing to do, honestly. As you hit your Saturn return at 30, you kind of like create the container for the next chapter of your life. I've seen it a lot with people. It definitely happened with me. I definitely really needed to do it. So at that time, I really needed to live in a bubble. I really needed to be in that bubble to heal. And I finally was ready to do it. I was like trying to heal my best, but like be all the things and do all the things for everybody and make sure I was like being a good Greta for everybody and pursue a career somehow, even though I could barely function. And I stopped doing all that at that time. So I got into Artemisinin, and I got into it and it helped a little bit. And I think I was still working at Mac during this time and was nearing the end of that. Cause again, even to this day, it's very hard for me to stand for longer than like 7 minutes. Like, I mean, I can stand, but it's really, really painful. Yeah. I feel like maybe 15 minutes, things start hurting a lot. You catch me leaning a lot on things, like just standing in one spot. Ooh, that's actually one of my goals moving forward, is to make that last. Like, I have little goals for myself now. And one is to be able to do an uchimata throw, which you have to stand on one leg and like throw the person using your other leg as the kind of like the catalyst for that. It's hard for me to like stand on the one leg and do that. I would really like to be able to do that. And the other is just have standing be less painful for long periods of time, especially on like concrete surfaces and stuff like that. Thank you for bearing with me bouncing all over the place with this, but that is how my neurodivergent brain kind of works, and I won't remember to say the thing later at the end. My neuro spicy lime brain is like that. So I was in physical therapy. I was still on the pain medicine. I was still on Adderall. I was still working with Artemisinin a little bit. It did get me a little bit better. And then I started, now that I was like really learning more about plants, I was like, all right, interesting. This is like a promising path. Let's see what else, you know, I can do with this. And I kept reading about this plant, ashwagandha. I thought it had such a funny name. Like, it made me laugh. Like, I found some humor in it. And I tend to, I mean, humor for me, usually the more stressed out I am, the more humorous I find things. And humorous I will approach things. So I saw ashwagandha, I thought it was funny, and I decided to check it out more. It just stuck out to me. And my recommendation, especially when it comes to plant medicine, or just, you know, it's just your intuition talking to you. If something calls to you, which is how I say it, like, if it's calling to you, ashwagandha was calling to me. And it wasn't calling hello, like, no, it wasn't saying anything to me, but it stuck out. It's kind of like there's like a little highlighter on it, and I was like, interesting, what is this silly name? I love it. Tell me more. And I kept reading about it, and its name translates to strength of a horse or smell of a horse, because it's very smelly. Well, it smells just kind of like feet, but, you know, so I found that really funny. And then I was reading about how it's an adaptogenic plant, and it builds the strength back. It like builds that resilience back. I think most people know it today for ED reasons, which it does help with that as well. Not what I was looking for it for, but that wasn't really like the discussion at the time. I knew it for the resilience aspect of it and to help stress modulate. So the way that adaptogens work are, it's kind of like if you're underwhelmed or overwhelmed, it'll balance, it's calibrating. So it modulates, immunomodulator or a stress modulator, like they'll balance out and calibrate with your nervous system, your immune system. And so if you are overactive, it'll bring it down. If you're underactive, like if you're not responding enough to something, it'll help bring it up. Sounds like magic. It's just nature. And that's why she's amazing. So I started taking ashwagandha. This is truly when my life changed with all of this. So I committed. I was like, you know what? I couldn't go see the doctor in Reading. He was very far. It was expensive. I wasn't able to do it. I went to my Lyme doctor who I had been going to in town, and I didn't have the best. I mean, he was good. He helped me, but I didn't resonate. Let's just put it that way. And also the last round of antibiotics I had a full on allergic reaction. So the last round of doxycycline I had for 2 weeks, it would oscillate from the top half of my body to the bottom half of my body, just full on hives. I looked like Quasimodo for 2 hours, and then the bottom half of my body looked like Quasimodo for 2 hours, and then it would just go back and forth. And so I knew that I had come to the end of the pharmaceutical rope that I had been on at that time. And that's why when I heard about ashwagandha and I was like really looking for resources there, I was like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take, first of all, myself seriously about this. I'm going to treat myself like I want a practitioner to treat me, and kind of, you know, if I had something more quantifiable for them, like cancer or something like that, they would be a lot more definitive about how they're telling me to to take care of myself. And wouldn't it, I always just kind of felt like it was like, oh, you're sensitive and you should just be happy like with how well you are and don't worry about it too much. And so here's the thing that I guess I have not mentioned is that, you know, I was an athlete, right? Like I taught Krav from 19 to 23 or so. I trained all the time. Had I been around a gym that is like my gym now, which is an MMA school, I 100% would have gone into that. I really functioned at a higher output, right? So to see me at a lower output for me, it looked normal to other people. And plus, like, I know how to do, like, I did my makeup and my hair because I was just, you know, want to feel normal as much as possible. This is like my morale booster. So I, you know, appeared to people as though I was fine because they didn't have a reference point from where I was and they couldn't feel how it felt to me. And that was really hard because people are just kind of like, well, isn't this good enough? And I didn't feel it was good enough because I was barely able to hold a job down and function without excruciating pain and brain fog. And even though I might be able to fake it, and you know, even now I'm able to, I've had a lot of practice, like I can fake my way through, but it's hard, it takes a lot of energy. So I decided to treat myself like I wanted a practitioner to treat me, and I was like, let me dial in my nutrition, the herbs that I'm working with, my self-care protocol, all of that, like the boundaries, everything. I really focused on getting that together, and this was right about, I think this is when I turned 30. And so my 20s, I was like, felt like I was 80 for most of it. The music career pretty much had stopped. Like it was very, you know, hit or miss in that sense during that time. And I remember turning 30 and just feeling like I would like to try to do that again. I would like to have a better go at this next decade, please, because I don't want to spend it just trying to survive. I'd really like to actually like live my life. I'd really like to be in my life. So that was like a conversation I had with myself on my 30th birthday in Cape May, walking on the beach. So what that looked like for me in particular, when it comes to ashwagandha, which I say it's a plant that really like, it saved me. I started taking it. I took the Gaia brand, which I still recommend to this day. The Gaia brand, I love their, first of all, they're just an amazing plant company. Like they love herbs. They're herbalists to their core. They make amazing products. And the Gaia brand, I believe it's 400 milligrams per capsule. So I took three of those a day, I believe, every day for about 3 months. And so at this time, it was still hard for me to go grocery shopping, for instance. Like I would go grocery shopping and barely make it through grocery shopping and then have to like rest for the rest of the day when I got home. And I started, that was one of my measures. Like I was like, I'm just going to like set it and forget it. I'm going to take this plant. I'm going to see how it works. I'm going to give it a real true try. I'm going to let it show me what it can do. And at this time I was really just doing yoga and nature walks, I think were the only really things that I was like, maybe some like ballet bar kind of stuff, very, very low impact. I noticed that I could go to the grocery store and feel a little like not quite as exhausted when I left. I had like a little bit more energy and then like maybe go see some friends and then have like a little bit of energy left over. And it was just starting to increase. So I kept it going and it really helped me get back on my feet. Like it restored my body in a very profound way. And it took consistency with it and just not to like stare at the results, let's say. I wasn't like 2 weeks in. I think for most people, like when I would recommend this for clients, I did see most people notice a difference, like most healthy people in about 2 weeks, maybe a month they would notice a bigger difference. But if you're somebody who, you know, has been, at that point, I had been, you know, about a decade in of an autoimmune and just like constant barrage of antibiotics and medications and things like that. So a little bit different story in that sense. It brought me back to my feet. And after that, I decided, and again, I was dialing in my nutrition and trying to be, I think I was vegetarian for a long time and then pescatarian for a long time. And I did, you know, I wish that I could have stayed that way for my own reasons for caring about the animals. And I did start eating meat. I think I was vegetarian, pescatarian, a combo of those for about 8 years. And I did start eating meat again about 7 years ago or so. And it has made a big difference. And, you know, I wish that it wasn't that way, but I don't mean to sound so cash about that, but I'm just going to touch on that real quick. So after that, I decided to go to school and get my master's in nutrition and herbalism because I saw it for myself, how it how it changed my life. And I think that, you know, when I look at it now, I didn't know if I would have the energy makeup, let's say. Like, my mom was a doctor. She saw 50 patients a day or something. And my sister is a psychologist, and she sees a number of people a day. And I'm not, I just don't think I'm built like that. I think that I wasn't sure about, I definitely was not sure about that when I started school. I kind of thought that I was built like that. And I don't, like, that along with Lyme disease, like I said, I feel that I'm built to teach. So here I am. I would pass along. I'm a bridge. I like to pass resources along. So I went and got my master's. And during that time, that took me a few years. I took my time with it. And during that time, I went back to training, martial arts. I went back and to do Krav. And I decided to finish my like path with that. I was coming up to black belt before I left. And was grateful enough that my instructor, my teacher, was like, yeah, let's test you for your black belt. So I did that. And that was something I never thought, like, doing that. It was, I gave my life up in so many ways, right? I let go of any expectation of doing anything like that again, even with, you know, music, any of those things. Like, I just kind of like accepted, and this is in one of the episodes I talked about, you know, like, what if nothing changes? How do you find your happiness there? And that was during these times that I was working on, how do I just find peace within being in this human experience and being in this body and being this person? You know, how do I make this meaningful without having any expectations of the things that I had grown up having expectations for, the things that I wanted to quote unquote achieve and all of that? And honestly found, you know, ultimately I found the most fulfilling life path because of it. And I had to make a lot of hard decisions even beyond this point in terms of the container of our lives, right? Like making sure we have the right people in our lives and the right environment and all of those things. But everything I'm telling you about right now were the ingredients that led me to find this path. You know, I'm not touching on the relationship parts of it right now, but during all of this time so far that I've talked about, it was, you know, side by side of relationships that were unhealthy. Let's just leave it there. Yeah, so I got my black belt and then I started training jiu-jitsu and really, again, just was at this point, you know, I had like an arsenal of vitamins and nutrition knowledge at my sleeve and protocols and all of this, and really haven't looked back since then. So although I do still have flare-ups, like I said, right before I moved here, so that was 2.5 years ago, I'm saying 5 days before we left, I woke up and I have one of those mirrors that you can like see your soul. I say like, I can see like every pore, like it's right up in your face. And I was looking in it and on my cheek, I had a deer tick. I look like a freckle. I have never seen a deer tick on myself. Like I've had Lyme disease this whole time. But it was dead. It was the weirdest thing, but it was attached to my face. I'm sorry. It's really gross, but it was weird. It was like it died. So I don't know. I don't know if it bit me and then whatever, but you know, I still have like during leading up to this time, I would still have like rashes, not bullseye rashes, but just like hives on my back and on my chest. I had them for about 2 years. They only resolved, I guess, last year or so. So I'm sharing these things just to say, like, I guess when it comes to Lyme disease or an autoimmune disease, and I'll go back to the episode that I was talking about, like in terms of, you know, accepting what it is, accepting what is happening. I have tried to cultivate my life in a way to accept that I have some limiters, you know, some areas, some governors, let's put it that way, on certain things that sometimes are unknown to me. For instance, if I go to do a weights workout sometimes, and if I do too many squats, like I can feel when I'm about to go over that ledge, and it can happen quickly, and maybe it's fine. I don't really understand the rhyme or reason for those things, but I just know what it feels like. So I've learned over the years how to go up to that line and be able to like push my edges without going over those boundaries, where I end up being in a position where I have to have so much recuperation time that it's, you know, interfering with my life, especially since I train all the time. I've kind of found a way. First of all, obviously, you know, I'm able to do it because I've taken really, really good care of myself and have had years of building my body back up. But even then, I have to just be really mindful about pushing it. Recovery time needs to be longer. And salt is something recently that has been like amazing. I found I was undersalted, and that has been really helpful in my overall constitution. You know, you learn a lot when you have a major health challenge. You learn so much. You can learn so much. I mean, you're going to learn so much no matter what. You can learn more in a more cohesive way for your life, right? Like take on the lessons that are coming to you and find a way to interact with the challenges that are happening that will help you grow and not just be bitter and angry, which believe me, I was so bitter and angry for so long and just so sad. And it really, you know, it was the dark night of the soul that never fucking ended, you know? So like I feel like I spent all that time on my knees praying basically and learning and trying to make sense of it and find a way to be in my life. And again, that's this combination of all of the practical self-care things, you know, and the supplements and all of that mixed with just being open to inviting spirit in and however that looks for you and finding deeper meaning in this life experience. It doesn't have to do with our societal measures of success or what life is supposed to be like. There's a richness to life that comes it's subtle but profound. And I learned so much of that through this time period. So I will definitely share more about this. I know this was a long episode and kind of, it's just, a, you know, 22 years is a lot to cover in that time period. So, but I do want to share the story in the sense that, you know, you're not alone if you've been through this. There is hope. You know, there's so many more resources now. I work with a company called Thrive, and I interview one of the people I was talking about. I interview their patients, and they've had several Lyme patients who have worked with them over there, and they have incredible testing and an incredible functional medicine approach along with chiropractic and just like, but not in the chiropractic that, at least from my understanding, that you normally think of, like, you know, bigger adjustments, very subtle adjustments, things that are gentle to the body. You know, like I saw Dr. Molly over there at one point, and she did an adjustment for me, and it was not what I expected in that sense. It was like, she's a very intuitive touch, very cool. I was like, ooh, you're feeling things on like a different level. That's very cool. And it really helped. It helped with my breathing a lot. That's the other thing with babesia I forgot to mention, is a like labored kind of air hunger breathing happens a lot. All this to say, you know, there are practitioners who have their finger on like how to help. They're doing incredible work over there. I know that I'm seeing there are people who are other practitioners who are doing incredible work. There's definitely hope. And I will say that if you are feeling like, I feel this in my soul, that if you are having an autoimmune disease complication, right, challenge, please get your micronutrients looked at. Like, please get good comprehensive testing where you can really see what's going on there. Because if you don't have the building blocks for your body, it's going to be so much harder for your body to handle whatever's being thrown at it. So even if you're taking a more traditional Western medicine route, which is totally fine, because they really should, that's why it's integrative, like you work them together. Just make sure you are having somebody take a look at like the actual constitutional makeup of your body in terms of your vitamins and electrolytes and amino acids and all of those things and your food sensitivities. Like, these things should all be looked at so that you're not compounding the challenges that you're already up against having an autoimmune disease. So I really want to impress upon that philosophy. Like, there is so much hope, and it does take a lot of work, and it does, you know, take a lot of commitment to do those things, but life is a full contact sport. If it's not this, and it'll be like, it's not this, it's something else. But life will give us lessons to grow from. And if that is the one that has shown up, then, you know, then here are some ways to be able to respond. Here are some ways to be able to digest this information and live a good life and try to, you know, just be gentle with yourself with this process. Like, there is time. Life is beautiful. It's a total mystery. It doesn't make sense in so many ways. And I don't ask it to, you know, just take care of your body, validate your experience. Like, if you are going through this, you are not alone, for real. And there are plenty of people who have similar situations and are happy to pass along resources. And like I said, I think that the practitioner landscape has greatly increased in a way that, like, if I were to, you know, start all over again right now, I would feel like I'm in much better hands than I was 22 years ago. So, okay. So I am going to share some more about all of this in a bunch of episodes, kind of just take a lot of what I talked about and break it down into smaller pieces. But I hope that this has been helpful, and I hope that you've gotten something out of it. And I just hope that, you know that you're worth fighting for, you're worth having that hope for, you're worth embracing your life. Like, there is beauty around the corner. There is beauty in so many moments, you know, and sometimes it doesn't feel that way. But what I at least have found is that if I stop being mad at the moment, if I allow myself to stop wrestling with the anger, let's put it like that. It's not that I may still feel mad about it. I'm not wrestling with it. And when I just accept that I am mad or accept that I am sad, that knot unravels and that something more beautiful is able to come through. And I don't really understand why that is the way that things work, but it seems to work that way pretty consistently across the board. So for all of humankind. All right, with that, I will talk to you soon. Thank you for being here. Obviously, you know, please like and subscribe and comment. I would love to be able to connect you with other people if, you know, if you're looking for some help and resources as well. Thank you so much.